On part two of Navigating Nutrition, we discuss benefits of different cooking oils, safe versus concerning cookware, food additives to avoid, and important information on artificial sweeteners. Hey guys, thanks for coming back to part two of our nutritional recap series. We're playing a game right now. Can you guess what state we're in? Last time we recorded this, we were in Washington.
We made it really difficult because now we have a backdrop.
There's no clues.
Oh, the table is the same.
That's so true. Okay. So we're in Florida.
Yeah. So if you've been following along, we've been doing some weekly live streams. We've done two so far. And they're Thursday night at 7 p.m. And the first one we did on YouTube, second one we did on Instagram. I think Instagram is probably going to be a little easier to coordinate with some other people, which that's kind of, I think, we'll do some other topics, you know, some maybe Q&A topics. But I think, you know, having people on for 30 minutes at a time is a really good time frame to talk to them, get to know them, and, you know, have it still be concise for people, for our viewers.
Right. And we wanted to provide another avenue where we could stay connected with our clients. We could speak with athletes. We could have a more interactive atmosphere. And so that's why we wanted to do the weekly lives only for 30 minutes. So if you want to be connected with an athlete community, it provides that opportunity. We try to pick a time that was okay for all time zones. But yeah, we'll have some guests on there just so you get to learn, maybe be inspired from someone else. We'll do some educational pieces as well too. I would still love to do like a exercise demo. But if there's stuff you want to hear from the like lives, the short live clips, please feel free to message us. The easiest way I think is through Instagram. Yeah. Our handle is reckless_training. Just let us know what you'd like to see. But yeah, we kind of got that started.
Yeah, that'll be great. Yeah, so we're back in Florida. We're doing the live streams. And as Chris said earlier, this is part two of our Navigating Nutrition mini-series, which is a three-part podcast series. The first one, we went over Whole Foods, different types of branding and packaging in stores, different like sales monikers. Part two, we're going to be going over cooking oils, cookware, food additives to be aware of, and artificial sweeteners. And then in part three, we're going to be going over energy drinks and supplementation. So hopefully going to give you guys some comprehensive information on how to build your nutritional routine in order to, you know, more efficiently bring you to your goals.
Right. And there is a lot of information out there. I think we mentioned that in the first episode. So we're covering a lot of things. Hopefully this will help demystify some of the packaging and the labeling and what is healthy and what isn't healthy, things to consider when you're shopping on a budget as well too for your family. I have been really enjoying doing tons of research. Like, we have a great outline, and then I get to go in and find out all the like caveats of nutrition and what's true, what's not true.
Yeah, which is what you like to nerd out on.
I do. I like reading it.
Yeah, you handle all the nutrition for our athletes, and you already do a really good job. And I think that doing this mini series has kind of, you know, brushed up on some information that we've had, but also, you know, shed some light onto certain topics that we haven't necessarily looked into as much in the past, and just given us some new perspectives on certain things as well.
Yeah, I would agree. It's great. All right, so let's dive right in. So the first thing we're going to talk about is cooking oils. So that's any type of liquid, fat, seed oil, anything like that they're using to saute your vegetables in, cook up your meats, whatever.
These are also in processed foods, right? Because if they cook the food to process it, even like Ritz crackers or something, it's going to have some sort of oil in there that they use to cook it with, so.
Right. And the primary thing we're going to discuss is the refined seed oils. So a lot of times that's like canola, soybean, corn oil, things that are high in omega-6 and pro-inflammatory. and we'll go into a little bit more detail on those things. But I wanted to go over briefly some history on how we got so many seed oils in so many products. And so I'm going to talk about that. Ready, set, go. So first off, I don't know if you remember, but partially hydrogenated oils were created. They're chemically altered where they make oils solid or semi-solid through a process. And the reason that companies were doing this or utilizing a hydrogenated oil was to help with like keeping foods better longer. Yeah, shelf life, improving shelf life. Also, sometimes it was for mouthfeel. Sometimes it was for just like peanut butter, for example, is a great example. If you have peanut butter that you see in the store, the oil is separated. It hasn't been altered through a hydrogenated process. Now that, yeah, hydrogenated oils are now like taboo, but you every peanut butter on the shelf previously would have hydrogenated oils in it because it would keep the peanut butter and the oil or the peanuts and the oil together in one creamy substance versus separating.
That was only done away with recently, right?
Correct. Yes. And the main concern was the hydrogenated oils were leaving people prone to trans fats, which they were discovering trans fats were unhealthy for people. So they started removing these things from from food and nutrition labels. Sure. You can still have a small amount. Again, there's like specific FDA regulations on how much you can have. But since they were getting rid of those, companies needed to come up with another source of something that would help kind of like bridge the gap in making sure that their foods were stored for longer. So they started working on these seed oils. So again, in 2021, hydrogenated oils were banned due to health risks. So then companies started switching to liquid vegetable oils. Yeah, I talked about their use for texture, their use for keeping things healthy for longer. Also, random point, margarine is also a plant-based product. I found this very interesting when I was going down my rabbit holes of looking at just history of like food. It was initially created because it was lower in saturated fat. So they wanted people to move away from butter. They were looking at heart health. Margarine is from a plant-based source. So they wanted to put this like healthy plant-based option that looks like butter, supposed to taste like butter, in, you know, people, the consumer's refrigerator to help improve their health. The plant-based oil is altered. That's why it is solid at room temperature, just what I was talking about, hydrogenated oils. But like I said, hydrogenated oils are prone to trans fats, which are extremely unhealthy for heart health. So the goal is to create margarine for heart health, when in actuality, it does, you know, there are some risks. Yeah. Now, you still can find margarine on the shelves, but they're using different oils. But I think that there hasn't been enough time to kind of assess the pros and cons of certain things like that.
Which that's with so many of these new things, whether it's a diet food or whether it's an oil, like a new cooking oil or whatever it might be. Long-term effects literally could not have been studied, right? Mm-hmm. If we're just now starting to put something into place. So I think that's very important to remember when we're looking at these things. And when you're looking at things like, oh, artificial sweeteners, sugar alcohols, there's no calories and it's perfectly good for you and it doesn't affect your blood sugar and it doesn't affect your gut microbiome. And okay, wait, but what if you have it every day for 3 months in a row, right? So now we're starting to look at these things a little differently.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. So seed oils you can find in fried foods and restaurants. Canola is the most common. Prepackaged foods like crackers, breads, chocolates, sauces, even some recipes you'll find online will call for canola oil. You can buy it in the store. There are 8 seed oils most commonly used and discussed that are kind of like you want to be careful of because of the processing, which I'm going to get to in a second. And real quick, we'll plug that we do have a, what's the document called?
We have a label decoder PDF. It's a free PDF download. It is on our recklesstraining.com webpage. And we will link it in the notes to this.
Yeah. Podcast. Yeah, let's definitely do that. There's a lot of information here. And some of the stuff you're going to hear, but you're not going to be able to remember. So when you're food shopping, it's going
to
be...
Yeah, it's going to be really nice to have a nice little cheat sheet for you.
Yeah.
So we have a couple PDF downloads that go with this Navigating Nutrition podcast series.
Yeah. And
that's exactly why. We want you armed with the tools that you need to be able to go into a grocery store and make the decisions that you need to make.
Right. So rather than me just listing all these oils here, I would encourage you to go look at the cheat sheet. Okay, so potential health risks when we're talking about seed oils is they're often high in omega-6s because they're used to make processed or unprocessed foods. So you'll see there is an argument of like seed oils aren't bad. It's because they're in foods that are ultra-processed, and the ultra-processed foods with the sugar and the fats, that's what's really bad for people. But I did a little bit more deeper research. But there are some issues with seed oils because of the way that they're processed. So if you have unrefined seed oils, so that's something that's not altered, natural seed oils actually have vitamin E and polyphenols, which a polyphenol is a plant-based nutrient that actually helps manage inflammation and helps with oxidative stress. So these phenols are in plants to help keep them healthy, help them negate disease. But when we are refining our oils, we're taking away the nutritional benefit. So you would think it's innocuous. The refining process is actionable because it helps with taste, color, shelf life, kind of like I was saying. There's many different ways that people will refine these seed oils. A very common one is adding a chemical solvent, hexane, for oil extraction. So if you look for oils that are cold pressed or hexane free or expeller pressed, I think is the other one.
Yeah, I think so.
They should still have nutrients intact because the way that they're processed is a much more favorable way of bringing that to your table.
Yeah, it's usually a little less aggressive and it's able to keep those, like you said, the polyphenols, the little phytonutrients that are very important in it, because like you were saying earlier, life is all about balance. And generally speaking, a lot of what we're going to talk about today is stuff that is found in nature that has been just like hyper isolated so that it can be added in larger quantities to food.
Right.
And they're like, well, it's natural, so of course it's not bad for you. But that's not the case, right? If you take too much, I think it's Orient. There's a lot of different things that are herbal remedies that also have, you know, an overdose level. So
right. The amount matters.
Yes, really, and the pairing too, right? Like, we'll get into that. But yeah, we definitely want to be. There's a reason that whole foods are better for us, and that our body can utilize them more efficiently. So.
And I think people think processed foods, and they think like, cookies, like shelf cookies, or they think tasty cakes, or they think Doritos, or they think processed food is just junk food. But processed food means it's gone through some type of process to alter it, and that's why it's good to be a smart shopper.
Yeah, like the Pam, your cooking spray, that's a processed food, right? And if you're cooking your grass-fed beef with Pam, you're probably doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah.
Because right? then you're just adding in all that crap that you were trying to get rid of by buying the organic grass-fed beef.
Right.
So.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah. It's very important that all these little things add up. They really do.
Exactly. So the main problem with seed oils that are refined is also the inflammation. So seed oils are high in linoleic acid. That's an omega-6 fatty acid. Small amounts of omega-6 are actually good. You do need them. They are good for cholesterol. And in small amounts, they can help protect against heart disease. So omega-6s are not evil. But again, we're talking about amounts.
Balance.
Right. And the ideal ratio of 6 to 3, omega-6 to omega-3, is 2 to 1 or 1 to 1. But for most people in the U.S., our ratio is more around 10 to 1, so 10 omega 6 to 1 omega 3, or they've seen even 20 to 1. So if you're looking at balance, like you said, in those ratios, you can see that when those things are off, we have increased inflammation in our body. And inflammation in the body is literally everyone's problem. So that's contributing.
It's very interesting that a lot of these processing things remove omega-3s and still either leave or import omega-6s. And so that's why this omega-6 starts to get demonized, because it's in such an imbalance in our diet. But And it's everywhere from, from your supplementation and your preservatives and stuff to just farm-raised fish versus wild-caught fish, right? And wild-caught is going to have a much higher level of omega-3 and lower level of mercury, and farm-raised is going to be the exact opposite.
Right.
It's just having a more comprehensive understanding of nutrition and everything that's going in. Look, if you just only cook your whole food in your cast iron pans and you've never experienced anything else, nutrition can be relatively simple. But when you go to a grocery store in 2025, you're just bombarded with all kinds of extra stuff. And so much of it is marketed as good and healthy. And bringing it back, that's why we're doing this series, is because it's just so important for people to understand what we should actually need to be looking for and paying attention to when we're going on these groceries.
We're blessed with a lot of options. Yeah. But again, that's being smart about what you choose for your body.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So we have increased inflammation when we have high omega 6. And just as a point, inflammation is also not bad. Mm-hmm. Stress is bad. Omega 6 is bad. Inflammation is bad.
Reduce inflammation. Yeah. And that's because that's something that you hear all the time. Yeah. Reduce inflammation. But
inflammation is your body's way of healing from cell damage. So some of it is okay. The problems we run into is when we have chronic inflammation that leads to arthritis, heart disease, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, stuff like that.
Yeah, which often happens when you have mental stress because your body doesn't know how to deal with everything, right? We've said before, your body sees all stress the same. And when you have a ton of mental stress and you have other stressors inside your body, it's just an overload, and trying to recover from all of that at the same time is just not going to do well.
Right.
So especially for athletes with athletic goals and aspirations, we need to be very careful about where we are allowing our body to be stressed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if you are cooking with seed oils, just remember cooking at high temperatures or reusing seed oils will worsen the negative effects. My suggestion is to buy pure, unrefined. And if you're going to use a seed oil, only cook with it occasionally. Please remember, most restaurants they're using seed oils because it is cheap. So there actually are some apps that you can download. I think the one that I saw that my friend Maria has, I think you pay for. But you can see what oils different restaurants cook in. But still, I think your best option, because if you have tiers of option, your best option is cooking at home and controlling everything. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean you can't go and eat out. You just want to be conscientious that they probably will be cooking with seed oils. And if you're sensitive to it, limit it. Or if you are really trying to optimize your health, just be careful about how often.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've said it before, generally speaking, Chris and I's date night is us going to Whole Foods, picking out a piece of steak and a piece of fish. And we come back and we cook food and we enjoy each other's company and we have a nice dinner night. So we're going to spend less money than going out to eat. We are two people who get overstimulated by large crowds easily too. So that's another plus that we don't have to deal with that. Sometimes it's nice going out. Sometimes it's nice being in public, dressing up, going out and being a part of the world, but I don't know. I just love food when it comes to the date night. And I also like cooking. I enjoy cooking for Chris too. So it's a win-win for everyone, I think. Yeah. Okay.
So yeah. So not all restaurants are bad, but probably most of them are going to use something more affordable.
Yeah.
Okay, alternatives. If you are cooking at home, extra virgin olive oil is good for low heat cooking. So every oil will have a smoke point. So that's something you can also Google that, because it will become altered at certain temperatures. Also affects like the flavoring, but for health benefits, you want to make sure that you're cooking at an appropriate heat. Olive oil is best used for like a dressing. Avocado oil has a high smoke point, so you can use that for high heat cooking. And both extra virgin olive oil and avocado oil are higher in omega-3s, higher in monounsaturated fats. Yeah, there's going to be a better overall option than a canola, a corn oil. What else is there? Soybean oil. There's so many.
Grapeseed.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot, like you said.
Okay. Let's also kind of divert slightly to grass-fed butter or ghee, because that is something else you can use to cook with.
Yeah.
We use grass-fed butter.
Yeah, we use extra virgin olive oil to season and condition our pans.
We have cast iron pans. Cast iron
pans. We use olive oil to condition the pans, and then we use butter to cook in. Right now, I think we're using Kerrygold.
Our chef.
Butter.
My at-home chef. Yeah. I do cook, too.
She does. She does a great job.
But you should just, if your partner is better at something, you should let them do it.
Lean into it. Yeah. And I like doing it for you. So
I also don't mind cleaning the dishes. I like cleaning the dishes.
Yeah.
But okay, grass-fed butter. And ghee, both contain CLA. So if you listen to the first podcast, we talked about grass-fed beef and the benefits of CLA and vitamin K2. If you have any concerns with saturated fat, you're just going to want to be a little bit careful about using butter and ghee. Butter is 80% butter fat and milk solids and water. Ghee is 100% butter fat. No milk solids and no water. So ghee is actually made from butter, and they actually heat it up and they remove the milk fat. They remove all liquid so that it's a concentrated fat. But it's cooked down and it caramelizes a little bit, so it has a nuttier flavor. And because it has no water in it, it has a higher smoke point. So you can cook at a higher temperature with the ghee versus the butter. And if something has no water in it and it's a fat, it has a higher or a longer shelf life. So ghee will last a little bit longer. And for those that are concerned about lactose or casein, you're maybe a little bit sensitive to dairy, ghee has no lactose and no casein. It is completely removed. So, well, the milk solids are removed. So, you should not have an issue with that. Ghee is used in a lot of like South Asian, North African, Middle Eastern, Indian cuisines. I don't think that I've ever cooked with it.
I have not. I was trying to think who. I don't remember if Danae had some. I know
Maria. That's who I would think would have some. Yeah.
Yeah. I do know it's a little more expensive, and that's why I haven't gotten it. The grass-fed butter is that's the tier that I can afford.
Yeah. Right now, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we've been using. So,
but for nutritional value, just know it is a little bit higher in fat because it's more concentrated, but it has definitely its benefits. So yeah, that's what we use to cook with. Okay, moving on to our second part, our second thing, second topic.
Let me back up real quick.
Go ahead.
So I said that we use cast iron, we cook with butter. I use different amounts of butter when I cook different things. But each thing that I cook, I try to use that same amount of butter every time I cook that thing.
Okay. Give an example.
Well, for your egg whites, I use a stick of butter and I wipe it on the pan when it's still pretty cool. Whereas my pan, when I'm cooking my turkey bacon and scrambled eggs and cheese, maybe because I'm moving the eggs around more, or I don't know, but it needs a little bit more butter.
Yeah.
So I'll wait until the pan's a little warmer before I take that stick of butter and coat the pan so that it melts a little more butter onto there.
Okay.
And then pouring those egg whites into the pan, it doesn't need very much extra oil in there for it to not stick. So like I said, a nice light coating for your egg whites, and then you flip it once and it's great. And then, yeah, it looks dry after that, but now we're about to clean it. We're going to recoat it with olive oil, let it seep into the pores, And then we're going to, you know, prepare for our next dish. But I say that to say that I do believe it's possible to use butter and cast iron pans when you're tracking calories. But you do have to be very intentional with it and very specific, right? And it helps if you're the one doing it every time, or if like, if, you know, if you're in prep and I'm the one cooking because I know exactly what's going on, you know, that's acceptable too.
Yeah.
But it's like, if we were to go visit family, I wouldn't ask them to cook for me when I'm, you know, 3 weeks out from a show.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. So, yeah, it's definitely a different experience versus like cooking in Teflon or nonstick pans where you don't need any extra oil and you know exactly what's going in there. But it's the same principle, right? If you're doing the same exact thing every single time, then you can control it a little better. But yeah, I just wanted to make that point that it is a little bit different, but you don't need a ton of butter if you season and condition your pans properly and if you take care of them properly.
Which I want you to talk about how you season and take care of the cast iron pans when we get to it.
Oh, yeah. We're not on cookware yet. Yeah, we are. We're kind of on cookware.
But I do want to
let you go through the other ones first.
Yeah. But I did want to add to the point of, like, as a person who, like, tracked every single thing that went into my mouth forever and ever. Not forever and ever. Okay. Wait, I'm exaggerating. For a very long time, because I wanted to be like the best athlete I could. And that meant like micromanaging everything that I put into my mouth every 365 days a year. Yes, there was a stress aspect to it. And when we started using cast iron pans and it doesn't cook the same as a nonstick pan, it was very hard for me to transition at first. Cause I'm like, okay, well, I either can let all my food stick to this pan, or I have to use like a ton of oil and butter, and I just don't want all this additional fat because I'm not used to eating it.
Well, you don't like oily or fatty foods anyway.
I don't.
So,
but like, it was kind of like a mental thing for me to be like, I don't cook with butter. I use like a nonstick spray, and now I'm cooking with butter in this cast iron pan, and I'm thinking about like Southern cooking, and like, that is just not me. But I will say it's been, I don't know how long it's been. It's been a while.
Most of the year, I think.
At least most of 2025.
Because we brought a pan down for Miami.
And it's been great. Well, if you season your pans correctly, and like TC's saying, you're just conscientious of how much you're using, my food tastes great, and I have had no problems. I thought that I was going to gain like 20 pounds.
Every once in a while, she'll agree, I'm gaining weight. You put too much butter in it. I'm doing the same thing. Doing the same thing I always do.
It's always that.
Okay, babe. All right. You got it. I'll use less butter.
It's not the cookies I ate. It's definitely the butter in the pan.
Just don't come in this kitchen when I'm cooking. Yeah. But I'm using less butter. I promise.
But that's, I just wanted to be honest with people about like, that was hard for me at first to adjust to. I was making a change for my health, but I was, you know, conditioned for being an athlete and bodybuilding, and it has, I've had no like adverse effects. I've not gained a bunch of weight. I haven't gotten fat. If anything, I feel much healthier.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's the iron from cooking in the cast iron or the, like we're about to talk about like Teflon. So that's a whole other thing, but don't be scared is my point. Don't be scared. Go slow if you need to go slow. But it is a great way to cook, and I believe it's a very healthy way to take care of your body.
Yeah. Well, let me, since we're about to go into cookware, I'll go ahead and...
And I was also afraid that my cholesterol was going to be high because I was like, man, I don't eat butter ever, and now I'm eating butter all the time. And I just got labs done. My cholesterol's great, so...
Yeah.
I think it's better. I think it actually was better than last time. But anyways, sorry I cut you off.
Oh, it's okay. That's what humans have historically used, right, is butter. So, I mean, animal fat is going to be the most easily obtainable fat source for humans to use for cooking. So,
we don't have any butter endorsement.
Not yet.
Although we're talking about it.
Kerrygold, we're looking at you. So cast iron pans. One of the, I think, most intimidating things when we first got into cast iron was like seasoning and maintenance, right? And both of those things are pretty easy. When we first got our pan, So the second one that I just got, the second 10 inch that we just got, I got it from the Goodwill and I put it through the dishwasher. You may or may not have to do that. I washed it and I still didn't love what I was like seeing or smelling, or cause it still looked like it was washing stuff off. I think it might've just been oxidation. It's okay.
Oh, okay.
But I ended up putting it through the dishwasher. It's great. I took it out. I washed it one more time with soap and water. And then rinsed it off. I dried it off. And then I coated it with olive oil so that there was a sheen, but it doesn't look like it's wet, right? We want it to be shiny, but not wet. And we want to coat the entire thing. So it's one complete coating on the entire pan. And then your oven is preheated to 450 degrees. You put it in there for 30 minutes. It bakes the olive oil into the pan. And you have a nice, complete coating on your pan.
That's called seasoning the pan.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can do this a couple times. When we first got the pan, the lodge that we have, I did it like 10 times. I was like, I'm seasoning my pan.
You're always cooking that pan.
Yeah. So this other one that I got, I did it one time and it works fantastic. It does. It works very well. And as far as maintenance, we wait for it to cool down just a little bit. And then we rinse it out. We have this little metal, like chainmail looking sponge thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we scrub anything that's like wants to stick on there more than will come off with water.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, stuff comes off there very, very easy.
Very easy.
Yeah. And then we have a sponge that we never put soap on. And I'll finish wiping it out with that. Rinse it out. I'll put it back on the stove. And I'll put the burner on low to medium and heat it up for, I don't know. I do it until the water from the inside evaporates. And then I'll put my coating of olive oil on there and then I'll turn the burner off and you're done. And I know that sounds like it's a more involved process than Teflon. It is. But they're nicer pans. They're nice and heavy and your food it's just a nicer cook.
Yeah.
I think like Chris said, it tastes better and it's definitely going to be better for you.
So, and you get used to the routine.
Yeah.
I know.
Nice. Have a nice, clean, like cast iron pans that are freshly wiped and it's so pretty. And yeah, I don't know. I like it.
My mom got like a rubber handle to put on the. So that's the other thing too is remember that the handle is going to be hot. So she got like a rubber handle that you can slip on the pans if you want to like pick it up or move it or stuff like that. And I do know people do salt scrubs. You're not supposed to use soap because when you're seasoning a pan, you're trying to get oil into the pores. And remember, oil and soap will remove oil. So if you're using soap in there, you're removing the seasoning or the oil that you've kind of like baked into the pan. So it's almost detrimental.
Yeah.
But you can use a salt scrub. You could Google that online where you're like just.
You just put olive oil and salt in it.
Yeah, and you scrub the pan. That's supposed to clear any like extra stuff on there. But again, like we.
Look, also there's no rules. Right, Carissa, Danae's sister, she's like, I use soap and water on my pants.
I think someone else did that too.
So we've used soap on some of ours, and sometimes I will recoat it and then rebake it just to make sure.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think once it's baked on there, just taking some water and wiping some soap on it is probably not going to take off that burnt on, like the cooked on coating.
If you soak it in soap, I think you're going to have more of an issue.
Yeah, there's like, you know, it's just, you can't be lazy with it. You have to actually just do it, right? If you're going to cook with it and then clean it and put it away. And if you do that, you're going to have a pan that's going to last you for the rest of your life and it's going to be great.
They do last a long time.
So,
since we're talking about cast iron, there's a myth of you can't cook acidic foods in cast iron. You can, but here's some rules. You want to cook it no longer than 30 minutes. So an acidic food is like wine or tomato sauce. If you cook it longer than that, you can end up with food that tastes a little bit metallic because the acid will react to the iron in the pan. So just at worst makes your food taste a little bit weird.
I think it might take off the olive oil coating too.
Right. It can pull the seasoning. Yeah. So you might have to reseason your pan also. So just cook for 30 minutes tops. Make sure your pan is seasoned really well and clean it afterwards.
Yeah. I would also question you to be specific about the brands that you're going to buy cast iron pants through. Lodge is 100% iron. Whereas I was in Walmart and the Great Value pans are not 100% iron. They are a mix of iron. And then they have also like other elements that can be found in stainless steel compositions like cadmium and
interesting. Just like,
yeah, some other stuff that we don't necessarily need. So when, in our attempt to remove all of the extra stuff that we aren't intentionally ingesting, I would just caution you to find those cast iron pans that are 100% cast iron.
That's a good point. So. Should we talk about other safe alternatives? Or do you want me to talk about Teflon? Let's talk about
Let's. Well, other safe alternatives is real quick. So go through that, and then we'll say we'll go back to Teflon.
Okay. Well, we talked about cast iron. Stainless steel is also a good option. It's non-reactive, food safe. And if you get high quality stainless steel, it can be just as nonstick as a nonstick coating pan, but it's safe. So you're probably gonna have to pay for that, but it is possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to maintain, your cookware.
Yeah. You get what you pay for and what you work for.
Right. Right. Ceramic coated, you definitely want to look at the, elements that are involved in the coating. Make sure it's truly lead free and PSAF free, which I'll get to. Huh?
PFAS.
PFAS.
Yeah. PFAS.
Which I'll talk about in a little bit. Every company has their own process for how they coat their pans. But ceramic coated, you're just going to definitely want to make sure you take care of because the coating can come off pretty quickly if you are not. Glass is safe. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, our grandparents have been cooking and, you know, baking in glass for...
Glass is safe.
Glass and ceramic.
Save your glass jars, too. TC makes fun of me for saving glass jars.
I don't make fun of you. We do have a cabinet full of pasta jars.
But, listen.
And peanut butter jars.
Yeah. Classico makes really tomato sauce. So the Classico tomato sauce, they make a really nice jar. It has dashes on the side that tells you how many ounces it is. It's like really heavy and durable. So I save them all. And that's our drinkware. We have not bought glasses. That's what we drink from.
It's great.
But yeah, how many can you have? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's also what we use to store all of our food in as well. So we've gotten rid of all the plastic containers. Our glass containers do have plastic lids, but generally speaking, your food isn't in contact with the plastic. And most of the time, the plastic is an issue when you reheat the food in that container.
Yeah.
And we haven't even been using the microwave for the majority of this year as well either. So we don't really heat up. Anything we heat up is in the cast iron pans,
basically. Oh, my gosh. So. Yeah.
But even when we were using the microwave, we were using the, you know, the metal. I mean, the glass dishes, so...
A bodybuilder that doesn't use a microwave.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're hardcore. You'll just eat it cold.
Yeah.
So I'm a baby. I'm
the food is my much
bag of pan and
spatula. But the food is much better in the pan. Yeah. It is much better in the pan. I didn't believe it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I have.
Shout out to Danae for telling us like 3 years ago. Microwaves kill all the nutrients and food tastes better when you're reheating cast iron. And we said, well, we don't have time for that.
Yeah.
We just want to eat our food.
I said, I just need to eat.
Yeah.
I need to eat now.
Yeah. So now I try to get ahead of it. Tell me when you're leaving the gym and I'll get breakfast together.
T-minus 10 minutes. But yeah, no. So the changes can be a little bit weird or hard at first, but we've definitely got accustomed to them and I prefer them.
Yeah.
So yeah, glass works. Ceramic is good for slow and low cooking. So it's not something you're going to be able to like heat something up real quick in, but if you're going to simmer something on the stove, it's a great option.
It's probably similar to like the copper coated pans. You know, I don't know if that's like a ceramic copper.
Oh, you know, I don't know. Yeah.
Copper or whatever. But, I've noticed that those pans also lose their coating very quickly.
Yeah.
So, and maybe it's because I'm overheating it. You know, maybe I didn't know how to cook. I'm always trying to cook stuff as fast as possible.
Yeah, because he has to deal with the wrath of my hunger. So, I'm hungry now.
But yeah, so let's springboard in backwards in time. to these Teflon pans.
Okay, so you just want to be careful about nonstick pans. I know they're super convenient. They're everywhere. But they're, yeah, there's some health concerns.
And now there's a few different kinds. Like I saw like the stoneware, there's the copper, there's the ceramic coated. And honestly, I just don't trust. You said earlier, like every company has their own coating process. I just don't, I'm not sure that I trust any of these companies to actually care about me and my health. So,
well, a long term effect too.
Yeah, exactly. Like we still don't know about the ceramic. That might be just as bad.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Things are like fun and new and convenient, and then later on they're like, "Oh, this is bad for you."
Yeah, exactly.
So time tested things, you kind of,
yeah,
safe bets. But the Teflon, so the concerning element of Teflon was made before 2013. It's called PFOA, which is they called it a forever chemical. So the according to the Environmental Protection Agency, exposure to these types of chemicals, even in small doses over time, potentially can cause decreased fertility, developmental delays, hormonal imbalances, and increased risk of some cancers. So these coatings that they put on the pans, you just got to be careful of. Manufacturers stopped making the PFOAs in Teflon in 2013. Now they use a different coating. Again, just use caution, just because they took away, they made margarine to help with saturated fats, but now the trans fats are bad. You just want to be careful about like what new and inventive and exciting things they're putting on pans, because they can still, I mean, remember, it gets heated up. Pans can get chipped. You just want to be careful about what you're consuming and what you're putting your food in, because that food is going right into your body.
Yeah. Yeah. And what they use now is just says that it stays in the body for less time.
Yeah, that made me laugh. So they're short chain, which is supposed to be better than long chain. But yeah, it's quoted, PFAS is believed to be less harmful, so they believe, and stays in the body for less time than the PFOA, the forever chemical. So it's semi-forever.
Yeah.
I'm just being crazy, but you know what I'm saying? Like, just use caution.
It's nasty stuff. When DuPont first started making this stuff, their workers were dropping like flies, and it...
I did see something about that, yeah.
It's just amazing what, because that was not in 2013. That wasn't in the 1990s. That was a long time ago. So it's very interesting how long it takes for this stuff to catch up. So yeah, all these new fads that this is okay, that's okay, this is good for you, that's good. It's just be very careful about what you're doing, what you're putting into your body, and
be an educated consumer.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many things that even don't, like you were looking up taurine for our next podcast, and you're like, there's nothing conclusive about this. People are putting this in their energy drinks, and the companies don't even know why.
Yes.
It's just because this is what we do.
Yes.
So there's a lot of stuff out there like that that's just snake oil, and it's because they can sell you something.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care if you're eating white sugar or sugar or artificial sweeteners. They don't care, as long as you're buying something from them.
Mm-hmm.
And sugar and artificial sweeteners are both very addictive because of the pleasure centers that they hit in your brain. So that's why there's sugar in ketchup. So it's just, like I said, be careful, be aware, be cognitive, and
do your research, because there's
your brain.
There's many camps with lots of ideas about many different things. A lot of, there's a lot of agendas out there too. So most consumers are caught in the crossfire of what was happening. But you also want to be, you just want to be smart. And it does take a lot. When I was writing the notes for these podcasts, it took me a long time, mm-hmm. because I had to sift through like different articles, different studies, and some stuff was very conflicting. So I had to be like, I had to dig deeper and ask different questions to kind of find out at least some concrete answers, and that's why we're sharing this with you guys today. So the Teflon pans, I did read a recent report from Texas A&M. The nonstick coating from Teflon on cookware, which is also sometimes on light bulbs and also coated in ovens, like the the coating on the inside of your oven. Does release fluorinated gases upon overheating. So they did this study where they had these birds that were exposed to the toxic fumes, and the results were difficulty breathing, wheezing, gasping, weakness, depression, or anxious behavior. But often the birds were found dead. They were deceased. So the exposure to these fumes, and birds are very sensitive to changes within the atmosphere.
Yeah, that's why they used to use the canaries.
Yeah, share with the audience. I was hoping you were going to share that.
Oh, they used to bring canaries down into mine shafts. And when there is like a natural gas, which is odorless, when there's a natural gas, like concentration, the mm-hmm. bird would start to get sick and die. And I actually saw recently this little chamber for the canaries that when they would start to get sick, it would close it and make it airtight. And then it had a little oxygen tank on it too. So I don't know how true that was. I mean, I feel like back in the day, they just bring a bird in a cage and get a new one. But this thing would make it so you didn't have to keep getting new canaries every time it got sick and died. So,
yeah.
But the reasoning is so that the workers would know when there was a gas leak and they wouldn't get asphyxiated.
Right. Yeah. So they were more sensitive. So they're more like of a meter. So in this situation, you have birds responding to toxic fumes that we, you know, may or may not be exposed to as humans, but might not be able to sense as well. So again, these they were overheated. There was like hot, they like really overheated like the pan, but it still caused a reaction. So if you and most people have their pans or cookware for a long time,
yeah.
So if you are concerned about any of your nonstick cookware, you can look for a label. Most of the time it will say Teflon or it'll say PTFE because it will contain Teflon. If you see a Teflon logo stamped on the bottom of your cookware, I mean, that's an easy indicator, but I will tell you not all companies stamp their cookware with the identification.
Yeah, and Teflon is the name brand, so if it's not made by DuPont, if it's made by a different brand, it'll say PTFE instead, and that's probably tetrafluoroethylene. That's probably that is what Teflon is, and Teflon is just it's like Band-Aid is a fabric bandage.
Okay, yeah.
Teflon is polytetrafluoroethylene. So.
So use cast iron or stainless steel.
That's really the takeaway. I mean, they're relatively inexpensive to get a cast iron pan. Shoot, go to Goodwill and just. Snipe it when you find it. I got ours for $6 recently, mm-hmm. the one that I have. So I think it's just important just to like be aware, and if you have these nonstick coatings, make sure they're newer than 2013, right? Because that's when they switched to the PFAS. Right. So that's better than it was. So it's still not great. Make sure that they're not scratched. I know we've had some older pans that you can see it starts to check.
Yeah.
And then it's going to start flaking. That's the next step is flaking. So we got rid of all those. So, which sucks, man. Like throwing out a pan, it just feels like, why am I throwing this out?
Because
it feels like it's still good, but you know that it's not. That coating on there is not good for you. So, you know, we're doing things to progress our health that, you know, sometimes it kind of hurts to do, but it's okay. You know, we're going to come out the other side better for it. So.
Well, it's like you said, if you're going to buy the good food and then...
Yeah, you don't want to cook it in trash.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So that leads us to artificial sweeteners and food additives and all the fun stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll go right to some additives that you will find in prepackaged foods. BHT and BHA. Are both synthetic antioxidants that are used as preservatives. You can find them in things like lipsticks, moisturizers, lots of cosmetics. You can also find them in food.
Mm.
So ladies, we got it all over the place. These additives can induce allergic reactions. The International Agency for Research on Cancer does classify BHA as a possible human carcinogen. The European Commission on Endocrine Disruption has also listed BHA as a Category 1 proprietary substance based on evidence that it interferes with hormone function. And long-term exposure to high doses of BHT is toxic in mice and rats. It caused liver, thyroid, and kidney problems and affected lung function and blood coagulation. And BHT can act as a tumor promoter in certain situations.
So basically, it can be carcinogenic. It can make tumors grow. Well, those two things, BHT, BHA. So mm-hmm. those two different preservatives that are used in different foods.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you would say that BHA is normally found in cured meats and some other foods. And then BHT is normally in stuff like cereals.
Yeah, yeah.
Some other foods.
That's crazy to me. That's in cereals.
Yeah.
So, check your nutrition labels and look for those things. I didn't find anything positive about them, only lots of risks.
Yeah. Again, we will put this stuff in the label decoder download because let me see if I can say this. Butylated hydroxyanisole. Butylated hydroxyanisole is BHA and butylated hydroxytoluene.
Hey, that's great.
It's BHT. Now, at the end of this podcast, let's see if you guys can remember those two things, which is why we will put these in the label decoder.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So next up, we got MSG.
Yeah, which was very controversial for me to find information on, believe it or not.
Well, it goes back to that thing, what we were saying earlier. Like, a lot of these things are from natural sources that people, they take out and they say, well, it's good for, it's not bad for you because it's natural.
That was what I found, is because it came from a natural source, but it was in larger quantities. Some people had reactions to it, like headaches or like an allergic reaction. And sometimes they'd have a reaction for a short amount of time and then they'd be fine. So nothing has deemed it as unsafe.
Yeah, I would just say if like certain humans are reacting to it, there's probably, now you can come back and say, well, certain humans react to peanut butter.
True.
But I just really feel like when you mess with something that much and you extract something so that you can hyper concentrate it in something else, I just feel like your body's probably not going to do as well as if you're just eating normal foods with like normal seasonings and stuff like that.
So. Yeah. So I kind of left it as like, I don't know, I would probably not be excited to eat it. I'd be cautious about it. But again, like some articles you'll see with these things, they'll say this is completely safe, just not in large quantities, or I don't know. There's always like a.
Yeah. But the good thing is there are no studies out there that have confirmed that MSG leads to this. Or that cancer, right?
Which exactly.
Some of these other things, like they're like, oh man, these things are probably carcinogenic, and the FDA is ignoring it. So,
yeah, and it is from a natural. Okay, yes. It is from a natural source. Yeah. So,
nitrates and nitrites.
Yeah, these are in processed meats. They add color, so your hot dogs would be gray if you didn't have nitrates in them. Gray hot dogs. Okay, nitrates are chemical, nitrate? Okay, sorry, I had to read my notes real quick. Nitrates are nitrogen, oxygen, chemical units that occur naturally in soil, water, and some foods. But there's a reaction that happens within the body that is where we see some issues. So when you intake nitrates, they can react with amines, and they form these compounds called nitroso compounds. And if we have large amounts of nitrates that are reacting with amines within our body, these compounds are known to cause cancer in animals and may cause cancer in humans. Excessive nitrates or nitrite exposure can also result in acute blood abnormality that causes blood to lose its ability to carry oxygen to tissues, which I feel like is pretty important. Here is an interesting tidbit I found. The biggest source of nitrate exposure is in consumption of certain types of vegetables. So you're like, oh crap, now I can't eat these vegetables because they have all these nitrates. Because they're naturally high, certain vegetables are naturally high in these nitrates, especially green, leafy, and root vegetables. But vegetables also contain compounds such as vitamin C and other antioxidants that can inhibit the formation of the compounds that we're so afraid of that cause these issues. So you have nitrates in a vegetable, but the vegetable also carries vitamin C and these antioxidants, so that the chemical reactions happening within your body are actually healthy and safe. Whereas, like TC was saying, if we take something specific and remove it, and now we don't have these antioxidants, now it has become harmful because we're ingesting it either in larger amounts or in isolated amounts, and that's where we're potentially causing harm to our body.
Yeah. Yeah. Garden Life, in their tinctures, they use what's called an entourage blend, I think is what it's called.
And oh.
It's like a bunch of different things that are supposed to achieve the desired outcome.
Hmm.
And any one of those things probably wouldn't achieve the desired outcome, A, and B, in super large quantities, might not be good for you. And I think it's just very similar to this, where you eat whole foods because it's not just for macros, right? And I think that's what so many people get caught up on, is that they think that they're the only thing that they look at is macros. And that's why it's okay in their mind to eat these protein bars, to drink protein shakes, and to eat all this fake food, because all they're thinking about is macros. But the issue with processing food is because that process removes these micronutrients that create that entourage effect in your body that allows for like cell regeneration and recovery and all these, you know, proper bodily functions.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's well said. So when we're talking about these nitrate compounds that form within our body after a reaction, studies have shown that this increases the risk of colon, kidney, and stomach cancer among people who are consuming higher amounts of this, either through water or higher meat intake.
Yeah, you have in here that the World Health Organization and the International Agency for Research on Cancer has classified processed meat as probably carcinogenic to humans.
That's quote. That's verbatim.
Yeah, that's in quote. Probably carcinogenic to
probably.
Humans. And processed meats are still everywhere. Like, nothing has changed, right? They made this classification, and nothing has changed. So, yeah, it's just, like I said, it's so interesting to see.
Most of the stuff that I'm getting is from the National Cancer Institute as well, too. This is what I'm quoting from. Other studies have shown modest evidence that higher nitrate intake can increase the risk of thyroid cancer and ovarian cancer among women. So really, there's a lot of risk here. You can buy meats that are nitrate-free. I always look for, if we're going to use, probably the only processed meat we eat is turkey bacon right now. And I will look for very specific things on the label and make sure that they are nitrate free.
Yeah.
All right.
It's tough, but
moving on.
Everywhere. It's everywhere.
Yeah. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's behind you. Okay. Carrageenan. This has come up a couple times in my research.
It has a couple different functions.
Yeah. It's a fiber. It's a thickener. It does so many things. But carrageenan you can't find on a nutrition label. Animal studies have linked it to GI inflammation. It is a plant-based food ingredient made from a red type of seaweed. It is common in food additives, mainly in dairy and processed foods. It has no health value, and it's mainly used as a thickener, like a gel or... it also is in toothpaste, lotions, pet foods. Yeah, dairy products.
Yeah, you see this in a lot. You see this in a lot. I think there's carrageenan and gum as well, like guar gum.
Oh, yeah.
You usually see this with something that has extra fiber in it, too, because I think, as we discussed later on, in the fiber section.
Yes, I saw it in there, too. This
is a fiber, so... But it's a fake fiber, and... I see that you had in here also that it may increase glucose intolerance and insulin resistance.
Yeah.
So
that shocked me.
Yeah. It should be excluded from the diet of individuals with IBD. So irritable bowel disorder. Oh, disease. Okay. What is that? A step above syndrome? RBS?
I think so.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that, but that's what I believe.
So, yeah, not carrageenan, not great. But, you know, you'll find studies out there that say, oh, it's safe for you. It's not innocuous. Bad for you in small quantities.
Well, it's approved. The FDA has approved it.
Yeah, so it must not be bad for you.
No.
But just remember that they do these studies very specifically, and they don't expect, you know, they don't study the fact that this carrageenan is probably in a bunch of different foods that you eat on a regular basis every day. So, and it can lead to some, like, gut disruption. It can lead to a lot of different things. So,
well, that's what I had seen, is that it caused inflammation, and it can affect gut microbiota. So it does largely affect the digestive system. It reduces bacterial diversity and increases intestinal permeability. So leaky gut, if I know that's like a taboo thing too, but it basically is affecting your digestive system in a negative way.
Yeah.
And some studies suggest that it may inhibit the... Oh, okay. Oh, this, another study said that it could have an anti-cancer effect. But it's still unclear.
Yeah. Yeah. All these
could be good, could be bad.
All these companies trying to figure out ways that they
we can don't know.
Market a way to use this cheap product in their products.
Glucose intolerance and insulin resistance is kind of a big deal for something that is used as a thickener.
Yeah.
So that surprised me a bunch.
Especially because it's marketed as having no health value, which... That doesn't mean no bodily effect, right? And I think that that's important,
right,
too.
Right, that's a good point.
But, yeah, we can talk about that for a while. Let's hop off that. Let's go to the next one.
Okay, artificial colors.
Yeah, we're going to be on that, too.
Red 40, yellow 5.
Just a couple.
One of the most common causes of concern is red number 40's potential association with hyperactivity in children. So in 2022, they did a review, the California Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. They found that about a quarter of this studies examined showed an association between red number 40 and hyperactivity. Researchers concluded that the FDA's current standards for how much red 40 is safe are based on outdated data, and that what's allowed is too high. I do know there are a couple states that are removing them from schools. I think West Virginia was one. California, I think, is starting to institute it. And there's one other, I can't remember off the top of my head, but 2012 review reported that red dye number 40, yellow number 5 and yellow number 6 have all been found to be contaminated with carcinogens.
Fun stuff.
So there's that. And carcinogens are substances that increase the risk of developing cancer. Okay, so watch for those.
There's a whole list of different food colors, like especially for red, right?
Well, just because the food is, so your food doesn't have to be red to have red food dye in it. So yeah, we have a list of things to look out for.
Yeah, so we'll put that in the label decoder.
Yeah.
So that you can kind of match that up against the labels that you're looking at. Again, the more that you can buy stuff that is just single ingredient foods.
Yes.
Like meat or milk or eggs, the better off you're going to be. But we'll have this label decoder to help you make good decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two more points is that the FDA banned red number 3. In 2025 of this year, because it was linked to thyroid cancer in rodents. And some experts believe that red number 40 may trigger migraines and headaches to people that are sensitive to food additives. So, yeah, we'll definitely look for the list on the decoder so that you can double check your food.
Yeah.
Because you want to look at not just like crackers and stuff like that, but if you're using condiments, really anything that has an ingredient list, you just want to make sure.
Yeah, any prepackaged food will have an ingredients list that has a potential to have whether an oil or a preservative or a food coloring in it.
Yes.
Or an emulsifier.
Yeah.
Or fake fiber.
Or fake fiber. Let's talk about fake fibers.
Or an artificial sugar.
Fake fibers are added to improve texture, stability, and fiber content because fiber is good for you. Carrageenan is also listed as a fake fiber. So stuff like xanthan gum, inulin, polydextrose, wheat dextrose, or dextrin, cellulose. You're going to find a lot of these things in protein bars, shakes, your non-dairy. Be careful with non-dairy items because they all have this stuff in them.
Yeah, because it's for the mouthfeel. It's going to make it feel a little thicker and smoother.
Correct.
Rather than a little more watery.
Yes, yes. So. And then other things like anything that says high fiber in it, you want to watch. Anything that says high fiber or low carb.
Yeah, because sometimes they say the fiber, you subtract the fiber from the carbohydrates and that's how you get your net carbs or some.
Yeah.
Crap like
that. Or also they just use the fiber to supplement for the carbohydrate content. So that's stuff to look out for sure. Let's see. Issues with fake fiber.
Yeah, I've experienced a lot of these. Like when if I try to have fiber one bars or something, I'll get cramps or gas or bloating, and it's not great.
If it's causing some disruption in your gut, you can pretty much guarantee that it's causing some disruption in your gut microbiome too, which is a very pivotal.
It's your gut.
Yeah. I mean, that's where your neurotransmitters are getting a lot of process. So it's affecting your brain. Like you want to be very intentional. What you eat affects your gut, which affects a lot of other things. So I did read this article from a doctor who said, if you need to add more fiber to your diet, don't rely on processed foods with added fiber. The evidence for fiber's health benefits is based on whole foods, not on foods that contain synthetic or purified fiber. Not all the same, it's not the same as whole food fiber for heart health. So yeah, they tell, increase your fiber intake to keep your heart nice and healthy. Your fiber source matters.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and they're being added to a lot of foods now.
Yeah. And just because it's on the nutrition label, it doesn't mean it's the same thing.
30 fake fibers have been approved. They're not easy to identify. Things like inulin, cellulose. So we'll try and include a list.
Exactly. Yeah, we're going to have as comprehensive of a list as we can find in that label decoder. So.
Yeah, you're looking at the ingredients. If you look at dietary fiber, that's going to tell you one thing. You want to look for the ingredients list.
And then chances are, if it's like a protein bar and it has like 10 grams of fiber in it, it probably has.
Oh, man. Fiber. Yeah,
Yeah. And I hope you're not in a closed car with other people after.
I do always look at them. I'm like, fiber, so much fiber. This is the same rate. But yeah, that's a quick synopsis on that. Emulsifiers are also food additives that help water and fat-based ingredients mix and stay stable. So they'll improve texture, shelf life, mouthfeel. Common examples are lecithin.
Lecithin.
I have a Chris Bumstead lisp trying to say that. Polysorbates, carrageenan's up here again, because it's a thickener, guar gums, stuff like that.
Bunch of gums. It's guar gums, xanthan gum. Like if you see something gum, this is probably what it's doing.
I bought bonza pasta. Yeah.
The chickpea pasta.
Yeah, chickpea pasta, because, you know, that's the thing right now.
It's more protein.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, let me see. But it had a lot of xanthan gum in it. Just so you know, guys, like when you read the ingredients list, the stuff that's listed first is the largest amount. They have to list the ingredients in the amount of like how much they are.
Yeah.
So if something's listed first, there's a lot of it in there.
Yeah.
If it's listed last, it's like the lowest amount.
Yeah, which back to that ketchup, I always bring up ketchup, man. But it's because a lot of these labels, you look at it, and the first ingredients is high fructose corn syrup.
Or sugar.
Yeah. In ketchup. Guys, ketchup is supposed to be tomatoes, not sugar.
Sometimes water is a first ingredient, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, it's crazy.
It's interesting.
So, yeah. But it's just, again, like you said, something to pay attention to. And the more you know, the more you know.
I won't eat ketchup with high fructose corn syrup.
It doesn't taste good. After you eat ketchup with no sugar added, Sugarized ketchup doesn't taste good.
Sugarized. all right. So these emulsifiers, a lot of times they're in creamy sauces, also protein shakes, baked goods, snacks.
And dairy alternatives, just like you were talking about
good
earlier.
Good point. Yes, dairy alternatives. Some animal studies suggest emulsifiers can alter gut microbiota.
Just like most of what we're talking about on this, like the artificial sweeteners, the emulsifiers, the fake fibers, it all affects your gut microbiome.
Also, the studies and understanding of our gut is so far behind. So far behind. They are not studying their... And I understand, like, you're studying disease because you're trying to cure. You're in a, not preventative, what's the other one? The other one.
Reactive?
Yeah, yeah. You're trying to save lives. Like, I totally understand that. But I do know the research behind gut health and what the understanding is it could use some work.
Well, you make more money treating illnesses than preventing it.
That's true, yeah. So a lot of the things that are affecting our gut, there's a, like, just be careful. There's a heavy weight, I think, on gut health. I don't know. I went into a circle. My brain went into like 10 million things. But yeah, you want a healthy gut. So the emulsifiers can alter your gut microbiome. Like TC said, you can have some digestive discomfort, like bloating, cramping. Diarrhea is not healthy. You excrete a lot of minerals, also affects gut microbiome, fluid. So a couple studies I read, one in 2021, they did a study on mice. Research concluded that consuming certain emulsifiers may be a risk factor for developing colorectal cancer. So again, our gut and our digestive system was being affected. And they have also...
They say the link could be due to increased inflammation.
Yeah. Right. And negative gut microbiome.
Which is going along with the theme of what we're talking about. It's almost like they're doing it on purpose.
Save your gut, guys. In 2022, they did a study that concluded that consuming emulsifiers, especially polysorbate 80, led to increased food allergy symptoms in mice. In 2021... A research linked common dietary emulsifiers to intestinal inflammation, irritable bowel disease, and metabolic syndrome. In 2022, they did a study on nearly 103,000 French adults that they concluded sodium citrate, xanthan gum, and mono and diglycerides of fatty acids were associated with increase in overall cancer risk. A bunch of other ones were linked with breast cancer. And carrageenan, one of a few, were also linked to an increase in postmenopausal breast cancer risk. So, yeah, no one wants that. But you'll see on the internet, emulsifiers aren't dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not inherently dangerous.
Maybe you're fine. But it is, I think it's important to know that there is a risk for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, everything in moderation, right? We get to make these decisions on what we're putting into our body, but understanding that these things have a negative effect, and whether it's really, really bad after doing it for one time, or it takes a little while for you to actually realize the results mentally, like you are actually aware of the negative results. Even if it takes a while, it doesn't mean it's not happening.
Yeah.
Right. So if we have these goals, building muscle, you don't feel it happening. You go to the gym, you work out, and then the rest of the day, you're not thinking about it. You're not thinking about building muscle. So all these small body processes that are happening on a daily basis are happening whether or not you're actually thinking about it. And I think that you might be surprised at how much better you feel when you start taking control of all of these little things and putting all the little pieces in place, because it really adds up. It really adds up.
It does. That's so true. And we're not perfect. We're not perfect people. We don't eat and do all the perfect things, but we have made a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm. And we're aware. When we have a protein bar, you're probably not going to feel great. in a couple hours. But if it's your best option, it might be your best option. Mm-hmm. Or if you just want something sweet and you don't want a candy bar, right? Maybe that's what you want. You haven't had one in a while, but I'll tell you what, be careful, because if you haven't had one in a while, your body's not used to digesting those things. Everyone reacts differently, but that stuff goes right through me when I'm not used to digesting those things.
I think it just helps empower me to make choices too. I don't want to feel like crap, so I'm gonna choose things that make me feel good. And I mentioned cookies on this podcast. I don't eat just I'm a cookie snob now. There's one type of cookie right now that I really like. We make it at home. And I look at the ingredients, and it's very minimal ingredients.
Well, you can only buy it at Sprouts and Whole Foods, the package. I can't find it anywhere else. I'm sure you can buy it somewhere else, but, like, I mean, that's just one indication of, like, yeah, it's probably got, you know, relatively good stuff.
And it's a mix. Like, it's so simple of ingredients, we probably should just buy the individual ingredients and make it, but we don't. And I try and limit how much I eat of it. Because I want a treat. Like, I want to enjoy, like, I just had my birthday. Like, I want to enjoy something that I really like. But I try and be educated so that I can make decisions and that I can be empowered to just choose what's healthy for me and my body.
Yeah. Well, the rest of the day, you're not eating crap, too.
That's true.
You know? So, like, you pick your battles. You eat very healthy the rest of the day. And then when you want a treat, you have a couple cookies and you call it a night. And it's, you know, it's not a big deal.
Right. So, right.
Everything in moderation.
All right. Let's move on to artificial sweeteners. Man, artificial sweeteners. It's an ingredient that sweetens or enhances the flavor of food or drinks. They're also called sugar substitutes, non-nutritive sweeteners, or non-sugar sweeteners. Most are created in a lab from chemicals to mimic sugar. They are much sweeter than table sugar.
I think sucralose is like 10 times sweeter, right?
Yes. Like, I was in dietetic school, and they said sucralose was created to be 10 times sweeter than sugar. So you technically should need to use less. I see people with like 5 packets of Splenda putting it in their coffee. So I truly believe your brain and your taste buds, they adjust to what you give them on a regular basis. So if you tell someone they can have something 10 times sweeter, they're going to want something 10 times sweeter, and then it can be a domino effect.
Yeah,
that's my personal opinion on it. I have honestly never been a huge fan of artificial sweeteners because in the beginning of my bodybuilding journey, I was eating a lot of them because I was, you know, instructed to have BCAAs on a regular basis. And then diet foods were okay. They were like all the rage. So you're having all these artificial sweeteners and your syrups and your sauces and your drinks. And so I was consuming a large amount of them. I never felt right. And I also look back and I was like largely inflamed. No matter how thin I was or light on the scale, I was very inflamed. I also felt like I developed lots of gut issues after consuming large amounts of sweeteners on a regular basis. So anecdotally, I'm like, something's not right. But at that time, they were saying artificials are innocuous. There's no problem with them. You can have as much as you want. They're better than sugar. They don't spike your blood sugar. Like, they're the thing to do. And I thought I was being healthy. And I don't think they're as healthy as people are. I honestly would prefer to have sugar. I think I said that in the last podcast. But I do, it is a thing of moderation as well. I limit those things. Mm-hmm. And I do have, it's hard to find supplements that do not have artificial sweeteners in them. That's my one gripe. So I do consume some supplements, but I limit it. I don't drink BCAAs. If I'm going to have a pre-workout or a pump, that's the one thing I'm having for the day. And then that's it. That's all that I'm having.
And even protein, like, we stopped using the protein powder. The one protein that we have in the house right now is 100% casein. And you got to do a couple things to it to make it palatable. But
man, that's rough.
Yeah, it's like sawdust. Man, I tried it one time with just some milk, and I was like, what the hell is this?
And I didn't believe you. I'm like, this is going to be great.
Yeah, then she tried it.
I'm like, what is this? Is this construction material? Yeah.
So, like Chris said, it's just about picking and choosing where you want to place these things. And if you're having a bunch of barbecue sauce with your food and you're having just a bunch of different things, then your gut is eventually going to be irritated by it for sure. 100%. I don't care who you are. That much over time will irritate you.
Yeah. So your artificial sweeteners are chemically altered. They are made to be extra sweet, which again, TC is talking about like hitting pleasure centers. Like that still affects, that still happens. I remember like on a rest day in the beginning of one of my preps when I first started bodybuilding, it was like 10 o'clock and I'm like, I just want something sweet. Like I was craving it so much. And because on all the other days I was drinking something at that time while I was training. So I had taught myself to have like something sweet at 10 o'clock and now I wasn't having it. And I felt like, wow, I have this like crazy urge. I think I drank a BCA drink anyways, but yeah, your body does, it learns. It's very, very smart and it learns. So we just need to be careful.
Yeah. We'll have a list of the artificial sweeteners that we found. Yes. To pay attention to on the label decoder as well.
Yeah. So you will see lots of things that say they're FDA approved. No long-term use has been linked to any. I'm sorry. Long-term use has been linked because now they have more recent stuff that's come out. To risk of stroke, heart disease, metabolic changes, disruption in gut health. You're going to find like two different camps arguing two different things. It's going to be very controversial. But I have read a recent study where they did prove that artificial sweeteners do affect your blood sugar. So as much as they're wanting diabetics and people to use artificial sweeteners because it doesn't affect your blood sugar, white sugar is bad for you, blah, blah, blah. It is still affecting a pleasure center and it is still affecting your blood sugars, which we know about balanced blood sugars affect or help us with mental clarity, help us with mood, help us with energy, help us with our adrenal and cortisol response. So it is still negatively affecting it in that type of way. So just be conscientious.
Yeah, I feel like artificial sweeteners just have a slew of negative effects that they're trying to cover up. I mean, aspartame has shown to lead to arterial wall hardening.
Yes.
Leading to increased blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So I used to think it was like cholesterol and food, which now they've shown that, you know, dietary cholesterol doesn't contribute to blood cholesterol. And it's not dietary cholesterol that's causing your blood pressure to increase, it's the artificial sweeteners in your Diet Cokes.
Yeah.
So, just one more thing to pay attention to.
And that brings us to sugar alcohols, which some of these occur naturally in fruits and vegetables. Others are produced industrially. We'll put a list up for that. They're going to end in all, O-L, for the most part. Here, this is interesting. A recent study found that erythritol was linked to an increased risk of heart attack and stroke. People with existing risk factors for heart disease were twice as likely to have a heart attack or stroke if they had the highest levels of erythritol in their blood. So that is they're talking about a large amount. Mm-hmm. Risk factors for heart disease include diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity. The study also found that adding erythritol to platelets contributed to heightened blood clot formation. Blood clots can break off and travel to the heart, causing a heart attack. They can also travel to the brain and cause a stroke. Erythritol is in a lot of things. A lot of things.
It's usually listed in with the macro ingredients.
Yes.
Sometimes they hide it in the regular ingredients.
You can see it on the nutritional label.
Sometimes sugar alcohols and erythritol will be listed in like right with the sugar.
Yes. So not great for heart disease. And which I find kind of sad because a lot of times you're going to have people with heart disease or diabetics that are going to be told to have artificial sweeteners to come, and I understand, like, you want to be careful about sugar intake, but you should also should be careful about the amount of artificial sweeteners you're consuming.
Yeah, but and that's what we should be telling people, not to, like, continue eating trash. It's you need to clean up your diet.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you look at whole foods, sugar is in fruit and not very many other things mm-hmm. that you're going to ingest on a regular basis. And I know that you don't even really like hyper sweet things.
I don't. Yeah.
And
I didn't always. I was a, like, I could eat a Ben and Jerry's pint easy. Yeah.
But it's about what you are eating, right? And when you're eating Ben and Jerry's, it's easier to eat Ben and Jerry's.
Oh yeah.
And when you're not, like when you're in prep and that's all you're eating, I'll tell you what, that plate of chicken and rice, you put some salt on there and you're looking for the salt. It's more the salt than the sweet. But yeah, it's just, you know, you have to be cognizant, and sometimes it's tough. The sugar detox will take a couple days. If you're used to eating a bunch of white sugar and you try to cut it out, you just got to be strong for a couple days, but then that urge is going to go away very quickly.
It might be longer than a couple days, depending on.
Yeah, I guess depending on it. For me, it's usually like 2-3 days. So,
just a machine.
Well, yeah, you just got to stay busy. Just
it keep takes going. Me like two, I feel like 2 weeks to kind of like kick it, but I've kept white sugar and artificial sweeteners out. I won't say completely I've kept white sugar out. I do have it in a couple things. But if I use a sweetener, I like maple syrup, I like honey. And I have been accustomed to not having things super sweet all the time.
Yeah.
I was saying the other day that I feel like, what was it I was eating? Vegetables, some vegetable. I'm like, these vegetables are really sweet. Corn tastes really sweet to me. I think green beans one time tasted really sweet to me.
That was recently.
Zucchini? I don't know. Something that I would never say, this is sweet.
I forget, but I do remember you saying that. So
Vegetables are starting to sweet. So your taste buds adjust. Okay, a review of 37 studies on artificial sweeteners found that they're associated with a number of health issues, including weight gain and obesity. They were also associated with a higher incidence of high blood pressure and metabolic syndrome. The World Health Organization found evidence that long-term use of sweeteners can lead to an increased risk of type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. So there are reports out there. You just have to dig a little bit and you can find them. But most of the time, they're just going to say the biggest thing is digestive distress. Just to watch. Don't eat too much because you might have digestive distress.
Yeah, but if you have digestive distress, that's disrupting your gut microbiome, which is creating a whole slew of other issues. But like you said earlier, gut microbiome research is way behind.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's...
I think it's very complex, too. So they haven't... It's taking some time. I'll do it for...
do the meta-analysis.
So natural sweeteners that are a little bit better. Stevia is plant-based. Some people hate the taste of it. That's a genetic difference, I think. Some people taste stevia is very bitter. Some people it tastes sweet. Monk fruit is not bad.
It's usually paired with something else, though.
It is. So because I don't think it is super sweet. Yeah. So they put it in there to say, like, natural sweetener, but then there's something else usually in there to help. Red
Bull does that. They put monk fruit and then they also put erythritol.
Oh, okay. Raw honey, maple syrup, coconut sugar. They're gonna have a little bit more nutrient benefit along with it. But again, OSE, if you're looking at a nutritional label, OSE is gonna be indicative of sugar. Wow. Okay, great. So that brings us to the end of this second segment. Wow. Yeah. Okay, great. I was trying to make sure we moved through fast and we didn't like lag too long, but yeah. I read a lot of studies just to make people sad while they're listening to this podcast. And the study just tells you that you shouldn't consume it. But our whole point of doing this podcast is to just share what we know, share what we've learned. I'm reading from a bunch of studies with notations. So I was very careful about where I was finding information from, not just, you know, I don't know. I want to make sure that, and if I'm seeing information repeated through multiple avenues, most likely you can assume that that is going to have a little bit more weight to it than just, you know,
a blog
doesn't like something. Yeah. For some reason. So we try to find like good resources. Yes. Look for that. Nutrition.
We'll do a label decoder.
Label decoder.
We have a pantry purge, a label decoder. We have a couple different little PDFs for you guys for this nutrition, navigating nutrition mini series. And
next up,
we will also have, we're going to post some of these links in every month. On the first, we send out our newsletter, and in the newsletter, there is a research roundup or research corner. I think I call it different things in different emails. Surprise, surprise. But yeah, so we're going to post some of these links to some of these studies that we've been, you know, looking at and using for this information so that you guys can go through and research it, you know, and look through yourself and then kind of find a rabbit hole to go down. But yeah, so make sure you're signed up for the newsletter if you're not already.
How do they do that?
You can go to our website. There's multiple pages on our website where you can sign up for the newsletter. You just punch your email in and you're signed up. That gives you access to the newsletter that we send out on the first of every month. We have a nice little coupon in there for some Reckless merchandise. We also have a coupon for first-time athletes who are interested in trying out Reckless Training as a coaching company. And we have some athlete highlights. We have our podcast information. And we have, as I said earlier, the research corner.
And there's a little motivational blurb at the top. I think you do a good job with it.
Yeah, a little intro.
I'm always like, oh, yeah, okay, I can do this.
Yeah, you could do it.
For our next section, we will be talking about supplementation, and we will be including energy drinks. I already started down that rabbit hole, so don't be scared. Come back and listen to the third. Even if you love energy drinks, come back. We're going to talk about specific things like caffeine. And again, just so you can be aware, you can make choices. Not all things are bad. Some things are moderation. And it's just about being, like we said from the beginning, an educated consumer. So we will be providing that information. Anything else you wanted to suggest? For coaching, you can visit Reckless Training. Our Instagram handle is reckless_training. If you have questions, you can send questions to us. We want to hear if there's something on the podcast you want to hear, or you want to ask us something specific about your situation, and you want to ask the coaches, we're here for that. And we also do, again, one more time, we do the live stream at 7 to 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We will always post it on Instagram on Thursdays. Thank you. We'll always post it on Instagram so you can see the invite, you know where to find us, and we'll answer questions live, or talk about a specific topic or both.
Yeah, I think that's great. Did a great job, babe. Make sure you like and subscribe our videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
And,
all the support, like the best support is, what you appreciated from our content. A like, a subscribe, that means a lot to us.
Yeah, some engagement definitely helps the algorithm. If you guys have any questions, the best place to reach us is probably through Instagram. And yeah, all of our training information is on our website, recklesstraining.com.
So you take us out.
So yeah, until next time, work hard, stay humble, and train reckless.